Welcome back for another helping of Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, bringing you the best TV shows and movies weekly in an easily digestible podcast packed with laughs by me, Ross Bolin, with my dear friend, Mr. Barrett Dudley. Barrett, what is good?
Oh, man, just sitting here in the new digs.
New studio. First time ever for us at OCC.
First time ever for the O, the C, and the C. Are you done with OCC?
I am. You know me.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm lit up like a star, baby.
You do look good.
Yeah, thank you.
No, Permanent Record Studios, where we record in Austin, Texas, moved from South Congress to North Lamar, kind of close to campus. And Barrett and I are chilling in a new area as a result. If you're watching the video of this episode on youtube.com/BolinMedia instead of just listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever, then you can see that.
North Side Ho, North Side Ho, North Side Ho. Today's episode is brought to you by Project Pat.
You know what was confusing about that?
Even though he's loving cheese.
Very true. You know what was confusing about Project Pat and the North Side and really Slim Thug and the North Side of Houston?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We were in the South, where everybody was so obsessed with the South, and we had hit songs like South Side, South, the South Side.
Yep.
And then the North was suddenly yelled out all the time in random senses. And it was just confusing as a white hip-hop fan who generally had no clue what was going on at all.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I was very concerned with all of the set repping and neighborhood division. That's, you know, as a Houstonian, I didn't know what was happening.
But, it still cracks me up. You say Houston like a New Yorker.
No. They call it Houston.
Oh yeah. Houston Street.
Houston Street.
But do they say that about the city?
No.
They don't say the Houston Rockets?
No.
That'd be disrespectful.
Yeah, they say Houston.
Okay.
Did I say it right that time?
I think so.
You think I dropped the H too much?
I think so. Like I'm uncomfortable with it.
I say Houston.
Yes. Yes, that's Houston. Exactly correct. Barrett,
Cool whip.
That's
You wish you'd like me to say it like that.
What are you saying?
Houston.
Whip. Why are you saying it like
Houston?
That? Stewie.
Mom.
What? Today we're going to be talking about something that has taken me a long time, admittedly, to catch up on, to finish, to be a part of the discussion with. And that's The Vow.
Mm.
Obviously regarding Nexium, the Keith Raniere run cult that Barrett finished or was caught up on when it finished a couple weeks ago, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
That all of us were made aware of the news that Keith Raniere was sentenced, obviously, before we recorded last week, to about, 120 years in prison?
120 years in prison.
He will not be getting out unless he is, in fact, some kind of god, which, as far as I can tell, is not the case. And
now I don't know what is. I didn't look into the details of the sentence. I don't know if this guy has, you know, if there's opportunities for him to.
No,
to
he has no chance of parole.
No chance of parole.
Absolutely zero.
Wow.
Yeah.
120 years. Lock it and load it.
He
better start working out.
Look, this guy, and this is one of my points, and this is, we're going to get to this in a second. I watched episode one of The Vow on HBO. There are a few documentaries about Nexium now. In different places.
Mm-hmm.
Hulu has one. I think Stars has one.
Showtime
has one. They've got Oxenberg's daughter.
That's the Showtime one, yeah.
Speaking India.
Yes.
Obviously a big focus of The Vow. The Vow, HBO being kind of the premier television destination in the world still for me. Not kind of, it still is.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one I gave run to first, okay? I watched episode one of several weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just kind of like, I don't know. I know a lot of cult stuff. This didn't seem all that particularly interesting to me.
You felt up to speed on all your cults.
Yeah, I was just like, I don't feel like I missed anything here. I don't know what this story is. I'm not particularly interested. I'm out. And then I credit to the girlfriend and actually several other people, including you, who along the way at different points had told me stuff about it that once I got into it again and I did episode 2 and 3, I sort of knew what I was looking forward to. And it all made sense. And I was like, by the end, Barrett, I finished over this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I was fascinated by the HBO documentary. And one of the main reasons was a point you brought up when you started watching it several weeks ago, which is that they did such a good job, and it's the thing we discussed about episode one, when it was all I'd seen, that they did such a good job of drawing up how you could see how these people were put in this situation, how they were drawn in by it, and how Keith Raniere built it out.
Yeah.
Being the leader of the cult. So today, we're going to discuss The Vow almost entirely. Obviously, there's a lot going around. There's a lot going on in the world right now.
Oh, is there something happening?
There's this whole election thing going on. It's very stressful for everybody. We're going to avoid that today entirely and talk about something somehow even more disturbing, potentially, over the course of our conversation about the vow. So you have that to look forward to. You probably heard us talking about Quip a million different times. Quip is our sponsor today. They've supported our show on and off for a long time. Quip.
Cool Quip.
Quip. Quip. It's the greatest toothbrush in the entire world, and they've got something brand new that rewards you in your mouth. When's the last time you got rewarded for brushing your teeth? Probably when you were a little kid, right? With Quip's new smart electric toothbrush, good habits can earn you great perks like free products, gift cards, and more. The Quip Smart Brush for adults and kids connects to the Quip app with the Bluetooth. Then you track when and how well you brush, get tips on coaching to improve your habits, earn points for daily brushing, bonus points for completing challenges like streaks. You can redeem those points for rewards like free products, gift cards, and discounts from Quip and partners. So if you're somebody who needs a little extra motivation to brush your teeth well, And I am one of those people for sure. It's why I've always loved Quip with the built-in 2-minute timer with 30-second pulses for a guided clean. It's my favorite feature of the toothbrush. Now they've got taken things even further to help you brush your teeth successfully and leave every brush feeling like you just left the dentist. Plus, you can get a brush head, toothpaste, and floss refills delivered for $5. Shipping is free so that you're never using some old, worn-down, beaten brush head that's disgusting. You're disgusting everybody who walks into your bathroom and sees your disgusting brush head. Don't do that. Join over 5 million mouths who use Quip. Save hundreds compared to other Bluetooth brushes. And when you get a Quip Smart Brush for just $45, your mouth is going to be happy. Start getting rewards for brushing your teeth today. Go to getquip.com/OCC. That's getquip, getquip.com/OCC. Quip, better oral health, made simple and rewarding. Barrett, let's talk about the vow in depth.
Okay.
My major takeaways from this. Number one, what makes the vow, what makes Nexium as a group so terrifying was that it was such a basic self-help situation on the ground floor. If you walked into the door of one of these places to do, ESP or whatever, one of their executive success programs.
EPL, English Premier League?
Or the English Premier League, if you were watching that.
Man United.
What's the soccer show you watch?
Ted Lasso. I wrapped up Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso fans.
Unbelievable show.
How you doing? My mom's one of you now.
Shouts to the...
Barrett loves you.
Shouts to the Baconators out there.
The Baconators.
yeah.
You can see yourself, as we talked about, walking into one of these places, hearing the basic general rundown of what Nexium was about, and being like, all right.
Yeah. And I mean, like... Don't get confused. It was weird at first too, you know. And I thought this documentary did a lot of things really well. I thought that the middle episodes had a too much filler and too much kind of like redundant kind of stuff going on. But I thought that the first two episodes and like the last three episodes were all really, really solid. And in those first two episodes, one of my favorite people throughout this documentary, one of the most relatable was Sarah Edmondson.
Oh, yeah.
And
her husband, Nippy.
And her husband, Nippy. But specifically her, because she's kind of one of the first, she's kind of like the first person indoctrinated that they introduce you to. And she talks about how she like goes to one of these intensives. And is basically like, this is a bunch of bullshit. Like, what are these stupid scarves, sash things that they're wearing?
It's
like,
all very
this
silly.
Is so weird. This is so silly.
Which is always sort of how those types of things make you feel,
yeah,
right?
Right.
You kind of icky and like, this is like, what are we doing?
And then like we're talking about here, they did a really, really nice job of explaining kind of like what the goal of Nexium and specifically ESP was. And in that first two hours, a lot of the self-help stuff that they outline, like, makes a lot of sense about just that feeling where you can, or that idea, that concept that you have hang-ups in your mind that are very,
roadblocks,
very...
Roadblocks,
that are very, very difficult to overcome.
Yes, and that
and
they're...
able to, like, recognize
like a few
them.
Very powerful ones for each of us that greatly impact our lives. And if you could get through one of them, what would that be worth to you?
Right.
If you could get through two of them, you know, all of them, what would that be worth to you?
Yeah, exactly. And so the their little, you know, but beyond that, they're basically, I mean, it's like, they're like the little, the EMs that they're doing are like little mini psychology sessions.
Yeah, I'm EMing you right now.
They're they're somewhere on the scale of like psychology, hypnotization.
Yeah.
Is that the word?
Well, because there's a lot of, the language stuff that they used, okay? The main lady, who is obviously one of the, there's another woman who's going to be a large focus of one of these other documentaries, his right-hand woman, I forget her name right now.
Yeah.
She was a linguistics expert in a method that is essentially hypnotherapy.
Right.
It's like the Get Out stuff almost.
Right.
You know? You're in the sunken place now?
That's Nancy.
Nancy.
And just to jump way ahead,
yeah.
The reason that I loved that I was so stoked about the ending of this documentary is because it's a setup for the part two.
Season two.
Where they are clearly...
They have Nancy.
They have Nancy.
Nancy.
Throughout the entire thing.
Nothing from Nancy.
Yeah. She like, you see her in the videos.
But
you know
never
that, you
from
know
an interview.
That she's
yeah.
the right hand man, so to speak.
She's the biggest enabler of the entire
right.
situation.
And she just
is not an heir to the Seagram's fortune.
Right. And she just really looms large as like this enigma that you don't really know like exactly how big is her role in this.
They're basically at one point they're like, and then he found Nancy, and Nancy was a linguistics expert and may have given Keith her soul. And then they move on, and you're like, wait, Nancy seems pretty important.
Yeah, yeah.
And she keeps popping up as like the main person.
In all the videos.
In the videos.
Right,
and you're
right.
like, damn, Nancy was really, really, really heavily involved.
Yeah.
And it really comes down to a lot of the ways he presented things and spoke. And it's what makes self-help stuff feel so kooky sometimes. Mm-hmm. You feel like you're being had or talked into some bullshit, right?
Right.
And with a lot of the Vow, and I thought in particular with Sarah and Nippy, like you just mentioned, but also with Mark and Bonnie,
mm-hmm.
Mark being the documentarian who made the Vow very possible. It's all his footage that they're using because Keith was having him film everything because Keith thought he was a genius that was going to change the entire world,
mm-hmm.
starting with the most influential and wealthy people in each part of society, which frankly started to work for him, for his purposes, which it turns out was just really sex.
He built
the most complicated system in the entire history of humanity to feed women to him for sex. In a very specific weight, at a very specific look, the man was clearly grooming and manipulating women with the end game of all of this, of all the millions and millions of dollars spent, the $60 million checks from the Seagram's heiresses, who are two mm-hmm. idiots beyond my realm of understanding at
yeah.
this point. And if you're going to blame anybody for this that's not Keith Raniere, you have to point at those two chicks first, because what the fuck, ladies?
It's very weird because absolutely, like when it comes right down to it, it's like everything that he was putting in to this operation, oh, which, by the way, he actually isn't even a part of. His name is on nothing. He's not actually an employee.
Which is what made it so difficult for the FBI to build the case, by the way, because he had absolutely no official ties to it.
Right, which is, I mean, just another level of, like, evil genius,
I guess.
Again,
completely enabled by other people
but,
that he was manipulating or that are just were fully on board with this whole fucking sick scheme.
Yeah. But you know, you get to some of those later episodes where Mark is truly just like overcome with emotion, right?
Because he realizes how many really terrible things he took part in.
Yeah, right.
Minus the sex.
He has those realizations where he's like, this is what he knows that Keith is enjoying the fact that this is like ruined his brain, basically. You know
yes,
what I mean?
Keith was getting pleasure out of the destruction of
yes.
people. It's like, it wasn't just about the sex. It was also that level of sociopathy where he was getting joy out of bringing pain elsewhere.
Yeah.
So Keith knowing, like, Mark's wife, my best friend's wife, is sleeping in a dog bed on the ground next to him. That's like some shit he would go home at night and get a little pleasure out of.
Yeah, and you had to have that. You have to have that element to like tell
Keith,
the story.
Not
of
Mark,
Keith.
To be clear. Yes.
Yeah, because otherwise, what you're dealing with is just like a guy, like a dude that read the game by Neil Strauss one too many times.
Right.
You know, like a
if
pickup
it was
artist.
Just
because,
the sex thing. You're
yeah,
right.
Yeah, because he clearly you
by
look
by the
at,
sex thing. I mean,
you look at the,
whatever charges they ended up being.
You look at a guy like Keith, and especially when you see him and like his dumbass volleyball outfits with the
bro,
with the knee pads and the glasses and the headband
Barrett,
over
don't
his
do
ears.
This. You're gonna derail me for 20 minutes. We're going back to that later.
And the ponytail and all that. And you're like, Okay. Well, this guy is certainly, his little hands, he's got the little stubby hands. He's probably like 5'6".
He looks like a hobbit.
I mean, shouts to all the short guys out there. I'm right there with you. But you know what I'm saying.
Like, this guy's look wasn't it.
This dude is not a sex symbol. He is not a sexually attractive man by any objective definition.
No. And when they go to change his look and they're like, we got to cut your hair because you look like a psycho cult leader. And he's like, it is a little rock star, isn't it? And you're like, no, Keith, it's not. It's hobbity.
So he... You know, so he's got that look, and yet at some point in his life, he recognized that he had this manipulation power, that he has this weird gift, right?
This innate ability
to like to talk people into to anything, whether it's a multi-level marketing business scheme or
some kind of weird life,
some kind of weird lifestyle, or having sex with him, right? Like he is a master manipulator. And so it's like, if he's just in it, like, oh my God, I can use this to like do the whole get a bunch of randos to sleep with me.
Sure.
That's one thing.
But it was also the power.
But to orchestrate this massive corporation that just was like
thousands and thousands of members, Barrett. That's the thing about Nexium that ends up being
so international.
Internationally, thousands of Mexicans involved down in Mexico. The son of a former president of Mexico, high up in the Nexium Mexico organization. The entire thing, it's what makes Keith Raniere so fascinating. Is that it's almost like, because when you do it for harm, it's called manipulation. When you do it for good, it's called therapy. And that's what made this so creepy to me. He's basically, at one point in his life, Keith figured out he was an effective communicator. That's what being a good therapist is. And you have two options. You can use that to help people as your superpower, or you can use it for your own benefit to get your shit that you want. And Keith chose the latter in every fucking possible way, to the point that he thought he was the smartest person in the room. In many cases, he probably was. He used that to his advantage.
Definitely.
He took people on a ride like you've never seen. Guys like Mark, he was in it for 15 years or something, Barrett. Can you imagine dedicating 15 years of your life to somebody and then in the end finding out that the entire thing was a con and he was just trying to get it on with chicks who weighed like 105 pounds?
Yeah. Yeah, it's rough. There are a lot of affecting kind of
memorable scenes,
touching scenes.
Mark breaking
where,
down
yeah,
being
where,
one
where
of the
Mark
main
and
ones
Bonnie and Sarah and Nippy all kind of like have these like breakdown moments. Space, I thought it was, man, one of the just like the most impactful scenes for me is when Catherine is hanging out with Mark and Bonnie and like kind of starts to make fun of them a little bit for it.
And Mark freaks out.
Like thinks it's like, you know, that it's enough time has passed where they can laugh and joke about being duped into a cult for 15 years. And they're just like, it's not fucking
Mark
funny.
Explicitly has to and go like, wait a minute, no. We aren't there.
We're not there.
We
yet.
Can't laugh at this.
Yeah.
It's still ruining our lives actively.
Yeah.
And I mean, Catherine Oxenberg, obviously another one of the very fascinating elements of this entire documentary, because she is Hollywood and she is mixed royalty. Her mother is a princess of some country.
Oh, yeah.
That was a huge wrinkle, because the way Keith had this set up and the way he was so financially supported by the Seagram's heiresses put him in a position where it was impossible to attack and charge and get the government to move, because these girls had so much money behind him that you needed somebody of social importance to get the ball rolling.
Right.
And she was that somebody. If India hadn't been sucked in the way she is, it's very likely Keith would have been able to operate the way he was for a much longer period of time in the end. Honestly, the scene you just described was the number one most memorable scene in the entire documentary for me. At least top three.
It was up there, yeah.
Because you have this moment of levity where Oxenberg's trying to make that, she's like getting the giggles.
Right.
And Mark just fucking switches no, like this isn't funny. Like you see the horror in both him and Bonnie's eyes and realizing we got so sucked in that from the outside for people, because remember, you got to remember, Oxenberg's there to get her kid out, right? But she wasn't actually duped fully into this. She took her girl, India, to the first thing that did get her sucked in, though, which is so heartbreaking to watch when you finally get that information. But she wasn't in it, so she doesn't grasp the full level of mind control, right?
Yeah.
So she, to her, it's what is it, Barrett? It's crazy. It's great. Insane. It's funny because it's so out there. To those two in the room, though, she didn't realize there was a differentiation.
Yeah.
And for them, it's still not funny, and they can't laugh at it. And Mark has that sort of meltdown where he's like, it's not funny that I had my wife sleep in a dog bed next to me. And that's it's something that producer Mariah and I discussed a little off mic, was that, you know, I feel bad for Mark on some level. I don't have sympathy for him, though, because this was 15 years, and at many points, he wildly abused his entire position, like his place as a husband.
Right. And quickly, I think that this specific documentary does an unbelievable job of humanizing and creating empathy for the people that are victims by, you know, they accidentally joined a cult. As Mark is saying right in that scene, like, nobody fucking joins a cult. You think that you're doing something good.
And then it's there.
And then you're in a cult. Yeah. But you don't say, oh, I think I'll join a cult. That seems like a good cult to join. But you really kind of like really grow to empathize with Mark and Sarah and Nippy and Bonnie. The documentary on Showtime that focuses a little bit more on India, I believe, from what I've heard, does a quicker, faster job of like showing you just how insanely evil Keith Raniere is.
Mm-hmm.
And pieces of that are showing you that Mark and Nippy were pretty complicit in some fucked up stuff.
They
allude to it, but they don't. They would kind of undermine themselves by showing you a lot of that because they don't. I think that, look, when documentary filmmaking is still filmmaking, you are still telling a narrative story in a way that you want to, right?
Yes.
So it's like your goal, like making a murderer, the goal is to make you doubt the justice system and wonder if Steve Avery,
right,
is like a victim of being poor, essentially, or if he's like a crazy murderer. And here it's the objective here was to create empathy and understanding for how somebody ends up in a cult like this.
Right.
And so it would have been counter to that to show you a lot of the kind of insidious stuff that they
were taking
had to take part in by being members.
Mark was the essential part of the documentary on HBO. All of his footage was going to be creating it. There is absolutely no way they could have been like, Mark, and we're going to make you look like a total piece of shit here. Like, that was part of his deal in this documentary, undoubtedly. I'm not saying officially, but like, you have to look at it from a filmmaking perspective, right?
Yeah.
Him being the guy who was helping them get all the footage. What I thought they did a good job with was, if you're smart enough and you're watching, look, Mark is in every shot.
Yeah.
Right next to Keith.
Well, because
they show you over and over,
filming everything this guy does.
I mean, but leading classes, doing EMs, doing all this shit. Like, he's all the way in, more than anybody could be without knowing about the sex stuff. And even on that level, there was something inherently wrong about what was going on. And that's where you get, obviously, all the brainwashing and the amount of times that, and the way he was flipping things on people, where if you found fault in something, well, you need an EM. Yep. You need to address it. That's on you.
What was the word that they used for the hangups? It's slipping my mind right now. But
it wasn't. Now
I liked it.
Road barrier, or curb.
but I mean, yeah, it was a genius piece of the puzzle here that they had this
reverse
thing
psychology
that
was built
that
into
made
it.
A lot of sense. Like, oh yeah, that is a hangup. That is something that I struggle with.
Yes,
they get you to acknowledge that, and then they can literally turn anything into one of those things for you.
Yeah, so I'm trying to find the exact word that they had that they used. Intensives were the classes. They were wildly expensive, obviously, was another big piece of this. The entire thing cost a lot of money to be a part of. It was pretty clear that there were financial benefits to being a part of this.
Disintegrations.
Okay. Integrations and disintegrations?
I believe that was it, yeah.
They have so many phrases. Suppressives, parasites. V week was terrifying, the retreat week. But yeah, I mean, just this whole thing being built to make people think they're bettering themselves, and then the further in you get, the more crooked it becomes and confusing it gets, and then by the time you're too far in, like, obviously the big jump being that Keith had developed a piece of this sort of program called DOS, right? That was dominant over submissive, or whatever that stood for in Latin, or what they give us different crazy words. That, but DOS was the thing that was the end game, sort of, in terms of the highest level of Nexium, and in terms of the highest level of therapy, as these women thought they were receiving, sort of, like they say over and over, it was almost an honor to be given the mission of to seduce Keith,
right,
than to be one of his little girlfriends, basically, mm-hmm. that was getting to have sex with him. Like, it was enlightening to you. To get to build it to that place, to watch it go to that level and take that turn, and then have it describe to you exactly how these women were talked into it, and to see the branding, and obviously for Sarah to show us her brand, and for Sarah, the biggest moment in realization being that she wasn't even there for sex with Keith. That he had picked her specifically because she was so good at recruiting other girls, yep. that would be there for sex with Keith.
Yes.
Well, that was a heartbreaking moment to see. And then she realizing how many people she had brought in, which was then the big motivating factor, obviously, for her, for Mark, for Bonnie, for Nippy to get out. And I thought, to me, Nippy was the most identifiable character as a man who knows a lot of dudes that are like Nippy. Who, you know, got out of school and were probably ambitious, but not exactly the smartest, you know, crayon in the box, or whatever, however you want to put it, the brightest crayon in the box, but good enough people, you know, with good intentions that really wanted to go do something, that I could see of easily getting sucked into some dumb shit like this, mm-hmm. and then being a little too naive, for lack of a better word, to really figure it out.
Yeah.
And the anger he had, like his reaction to everything is the most normal out of everyone, even over Sarah. Because he's just so angry and like disgusted with himself and everybody else and the whole thing. And yes, probably has insane feelings of guilt over a lot of the shit that he did. So like for me to watch Mark, like as a man, to watch Mark and Nippy struggle with that, and also for his name to be Nippy.
Old nipples.
It's hard to take it serious. It's Nippy.
Do you remember that in high school, one of my nicknames given to me by my lacrosse coach was Booby?
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
I don't think about it often, though.
It stuck for a while. It doesn't like...
Well, you're not Nippy, and that's...
It wasn't, you know, like an...
That's a good thing.
An integral piece of my adolescence, to where it like sticks in my mind, or people still call me that nickname.
No, because then I would definitely remember that shit.
But yeah, that definitely was a nickname that I had for a while.
Booby. Old Booby. Booby Dudley. Barrett, you brought something up earlier that I have to touch on.
Okay.
It's Keith Raniere's volleyball outfits.
Oh, my God.
And
look, These were the volleyball scenes and the volleyball thing in general.
Yep.
Beyond like the personal interest aspects of the sure. documentary as a whole, these were my straight up just like favorite, funniest. Just if we can make a little bit of light, have a little bit of levity about the whole thing, the volleyball nights, and I'm doing air quotes here, is hysterical to me.
Look, it's because every aspect of it that they show us, I'm like, I kind of get it. Look. I've been in a place where I was broken, where I felt like I needed to find something, where I needed some help or whatever. You know, I've been in therapy the last 10 years. I'm very familiar with therapy and how it works and how people have the capability to change their minds, lives, attitudes, yada, yada, yada. All the different stuff they were showing us, you know, on a basic surface level, I'm like, I get it. Until you show me volleyball nights, which were a huge part of this thing, and Barrett... The first second I walked into that fucking gymnasium, I would have been like, oh, we're in a cult. Holy shit, I'm out. Sorry, guys. I made a mistake. That's my bad. This is a cult. Look at Keith's outfit. easy call. Mans is wearing a fucking head. All right, first of all, he's like, what, 5'6"?
Yeah.
He's wearing a headband. He's hairy as shit. He looks like a hobbit, little troll hobbit. He's got long hair that he has in a ponytail.
Yes.
Headband on. Elbow pads, knee pads, the shortest 1990s running shorts he could find, and like a dumbass baggy shirt. And the man looks like a parody of a gym coach gone horribly wrong.
There's so many things that I love about this. One, why
volleyball?
Why volleyball? First and foremost,
if you were trying to look,
you're not even like, a, he's not, you got like,
you didn't even,
you're
try
not
to look
a tall
normal.
Guy. You're not a tall guy. How are you,
you're
like
short guy? Who the fuck picks volleyball when they're built like that?
I'm a short guy and I love volleyball, but it's not like the sport that I'm going to choose to like show off my athletic prowess.
No, that'd be like if I was like,
Mark's going to come in there and whoop my ass at volleyball.
That's what I'm saying. Barrett, it'd be like if I started a cult and I was like, and every day we're going to play full-on tackle football. Like, I'm a skinny little bean. Like, that's not my game, baby. Like, what the fuck?
And then on top of that, the outfits. Like, you can just tell
it
how
was the
much.
Dead, the most dead giveaway.
He the only thing this man loves more than having power over people and duping girls into sex by selling enlightenment to them is volleyball night.
Yes.
He fucking loves volleyball night. You can just tell. You can see it in his every being how much he loves volleyball night. Like he is just the shit at those volleyball nights. He loves it. Him holding court all the on the sidelines when they're in the breaks between games, and he's
the
just,
most Jesus-y he ever gets.
And he's just he's just having conversations. He's meeting new girls, by the way.
Allison meets him at volleyball night.
He loves what he's wearing, and it's the dumbest outfit you could possibly imagine. It does not look cool.
It's the biggest red flag. It's honestly the biggest red flag. I'm serious. If everything else, if you looked at everything else, surface level, from a being brought in standpoint, you'd be like, okay. But if you went to volleyball night and you were like, there's nothing strange going on here at all, then I'm frankly a little disappointed in you.
But that's the thing. It's like, it was also crazy to see, you know, from this outside perspective, how goofy this all looks. And then like, he has Allison Mack in the palm of his hands five minutes after meeting her.
Immediately at volleyball night while dressed like
yes.
a volleyball
yes.
hobbit.
Yes.
She with starts crying.
With his stringy long hair tied back in a ponytail under a headband.
And look.
With like little bifocal ass glasses and
dead ass eyes behind him. Fucking psychopath.
On.
He's fucking. If somebody's ever looking at you like they're stoked about what they're getting you to think,
yeah,
then you're in trouble. Like that's a bad spot to
yes.
be in. That person is way too stoked about the power they have found over you, and you need to get the fuck out. That whole scene, like he's a foot from her, just like, yeah, yeah. You fucking hear what I'm saying, don't you? And she's like crying. He's like, why are you crying? Huh? God, I love this shit. Like sweat, like running down his face. He can't wait to get back out and bump, set, spike. And what the fuck was this? Keith could have picked any game, Barrett, and I would have been like, that makes more sense. If it was bowling league, I would have been like, that makes more sense. These people are dorks. The fact that he was like, you know what we're going to run? Volleyball. And that guys like Nippy, who are 6'2" athletes, were out there just like spiking the ball into his face like it's fucking like Ben Stiller in yeah. Meet the parents,
yeah.
Meet the Fockers, whatever. Like, it's just a game, Fokker. What were you doing in those knee pads? Did you ever see him hit the dirt
or spike the ball?
He never did anything athletic other than bump it.
You're when the small guys for volleyball, we have to make our cheddar by playing defense, man. we're the dig boys, okay? We're back line like pulling.
You are backline.
Pulling those spikes out. We're not on the wings, you
that's
know.
That's true. So you need
slam
the pads.
It at home.
He needs the pads.
Getting all the kills.
I just never saw Keith hit the dirt.
No, that's what I'm saying. Is that so? That's where I'd expect him to be. I didn't see him lay out one single time.
Because he's the asshole who's up front, and everybody's like, Keith, you're 5'6". You can't even reach the net. What are you going to do? But nobody can tell him because he's their Jesus.
Yeah.
Which is, again, a red flag. I love that sports were the moment in the documentary that where I was like, I could pinpoint the second I would have gained enough clarity to walk away. And it's the second I walk into that gymnasium, Barrett. And I'm telling you, it really, I'm not, I know it's funny, but I'm not joking. That would have been the moment where I was like, I'm sorry, but I cannot jive with that man. He dresses like that. I would have seen the way he was talking to the girls and been like, nope, this is something is very off here. And the fact that though it's like, Barrett, you know what he is? He's like the Michael Scott of cult leaders. Like that was such a Michael Scott
move.
It's very
Michael Scott, yes.
What are you totally. Doing? Yeah. Volleyball night? He could have picked baseball. He could have picked skee ball and it would have been more normal for his purposes. He went with volleyball night and then tried to pretend he was out there like a 6'6" fucking Olympic sand volleyball player. It's insane.
Yeah, I would love to know more about why volleyball. And you know that he is just like he's probably coming to terms with his prison sentence and he'll be okay as long as there's a little prison volleyball league.
Then he's good.
He's fine.
And frankly, he can start it up if there's not one.
That's
already.
Right. That's right. And you know he's going to try.
Do you think he crushes prison, though? Because the first thing I said was
yes,
like,
no,
man,
I do. I really
damn
do.
It. Okay. Because I was like, this guy's going to get like, I mean, look, I don't like to wish like sex crimes or violence on anybody. But frankly, if anybody deserves it, it's people like Keith Raniere who take advantage of others and ruin their lives. And I was like kind of stoked on the prospect of him getting to prison and then being the most stabbable, rapeable human to ever enter a prison in terms of just general appearance.
Well, here's, well, so two things on that.
Yeah.
The reason that he's getting so many years and the reason that they're able to like pin him with everything, anything and everything, and like just like the reason that this case is being so successful is because this is, these are federal crimes that cross state lines and he's being prosecuted by federal prosecutors. Which means he will go to federal prison, which means he is not going to be in Huntsville, Rikers, San Quentin, like all the state prisons where all the horrible shit goes down.
That's what you want to avoid.
That's if you commit a murder in a state, if you're a pedophile in a state and you don't do anything outside that one state.
Okay.
As soon as you become a federal, like a federal criminal.
For racketeering, conspiracy, and sex trafficking, and attempted sex trafficking.
Probably tax fraud, tax evasion. I'm sure there's some tax stuff in there.
Also, sex trafficking conspiracy, forced labor conspiracy, and wire fraud conspiracy. Those are all federal offenses.
Now, like you're saying, there's still a chance that, you know, I guess I haven't actually... There are some moments where... in the HBO doc where they spend a little bit of time on like the fact that like he might have been, or maybe there's more evidence that I'm realizing, but like, was he sleeping with girls that were under 18 at any point?
I never got that impression out of the HBO one, but it would be the least shocking thing ever.
There's an allusion or a comment or two about like, was he also going after girl, like underage girls basically?
Well, I know from people tweeting at me and also, again, girlfriend, she's watching the Showtime one, mm-hmm. where apparently there are multiple instances of him making jokes about committing a sex crime on an infant, on a baby. So there's more like really weird shit. You know how towards the last three episodes of The Vow, they start to give you more of like the shit that he was saying that you're like, what?
Yes.
Yeah. Where he lays out what he's going to do to these people.
Yep.
Stuff like that, where you're like, the thing he's talking about right now sounds an awful lot like what he's doing to these people that you're listening to him explain it to. That apparently there is more salacious, dark shit that he was spewing that's on camera in other recordings that are used in these other documentaries. And one of them is allegedly he repeatedly brings up how some instance of, again, committing a sex act on a baby would be beneficial to the baby.
Wow.
Multiple times.
Yeah, the Vow really, like, they don't drop that on you until, that might be episode 8.
7?
Where they show, like, some of the shit that he says in SOP, where he's like, and he keeps, the way that he does it is...
What brought me back in is when you told me about the men's and women's meetings is when I was like, I've got to get back into this documentary. And then that was, again, one of the more fascinating parts.
And the way he does that, where he's like, and men are just like, I fucking hate women and I want to fuck and you're a bitch and you're the cause, and that's the way that I would think,
and you're, you know, like what he the like fuck guy
he keeps coming
Clearly
back
how
to
you
like,
do think
that's not the way I he keeps like trying to say at the end that it's not the way he thinks. He's saying it for effect when it is very
so
clearly
that you can see and understand.
But you need to understand it because it's the way that guys think. Now, it's not necessarily the way that I think, but I do kind of think that way, but not necessarily, but I'm saying it so that you can hear it.
All right, now Susan, get up here. I'm going to scream in your face. And again, 5'6" again, couldn't look stupider in terms of goofiness.
Like that. No, that's definitely the way you think, bro.
Yeah, and then he sits up there and does like the thing in her face, and he's like, oh, she's good. Because she didn't jump? Because again, you're a hobbit. Nobody's scared of Frodo, dude. And then he's like, now do it to me. And she's like, ah. And he's like, pussy. And you're like, Jesus Christ, Keith, what? Like, just out of nowhere, he starts dropping these more harsh bombs. And then again, he'll follow it up with like, he'll be like, pussy. And that's what I would say if I was one of the men that I'm preparing you for.
Right.
And you're like, Keith. Good Lord, God, this is becoming very transparent. And it just blows my mind. The other thing to keep in mind as you're watching The Vow, and it's something that I kept having to be reminded of, was that so many people left quietly and were like, I'm going to say something about this, and then entered years and years and years and years and years of litigation with Keith Raniere and with NXIVM, again, mostly as a result of these two Seagram's heiresses backing the company financially so that they could drag things on in court for years and years and years and years and years and fuck people out of their life savings and bleed them dry so that they could not be convicted or ever found of any wrongdoing. That is the thing that made this last so long.
Yep.
And that people were leaving, seeing the examples that other deserters had been made of, and then choosing to be quiet and silent and not speak up because they were like, fuck that, I'm not getting dragged into civil court for 30 years with this dude who's got an endless amount of millions of dollars backed by the Seagram's gin company. I'm drinking it because they pay me for it.
And just like, you know, it just kind of like draws not a parallel fucking between a lot of these types of crimes, whether it's sexual abuse or domestic abuse or you know, where you're a victim of some sort of like mental, physical manipulation, and it leaves you in a place where you're scared to fight.
And ashamed in some cases.
Right.
There's a lot of shaming guilt.
Where it feels easier for you to like not litigate, to not fight, to not stand your ground.
Than it would to go fight and give up more energy and more time and
relive the pain.
Relive it all.
Exactly.
And so there were many, many, many people who walked away from this and didn't have
the one woman who like went to battle with them
hard
and won was like another very inspiring piece of the story.
And frankly, one that I feel like hopefully we get more of from some of the other documentaries, because she put her whole life into it, mm-hmm. to defending herself, and it cost her everything, and she won and was successful, and that's a very difficult thing to do, and something that she deserves a lot of credit for. And again, it's so hard to watch this happen to these people and also be watching them figure their way out of it, and it's just like so, it's so hard to put yourself in a position where you can understand how that would happen. But you have to look at it, obviously this country, one of our strengths right now is not to perspective is not a strength. We're not good at seeing things from other people's perspective or putting ourselves in other people's shoes. And you really have to do that with The Vow and with Nexium, and to be able to understand how somebody could get into this type of situation with Keith Raniere. And I thought the way they did The Vow, when it was all said and done, I thought it was one of the best documentaries I've ever watched, because it gives you so many different perspectives. It shows you how you'd be able to be drawn in to a thing like this. It shows you Keith Raniere's perspective in the way he manipulated these people, and sort of the salacious way in which it grew, right? From like a simple sort of deception to very complex and very evil by the time it was all said and done. And sort of the joy he took in all that. And you get all of Keith's side of it, and you can really understand by the end of it Keith and what he was doing with all this, right? What he did, how he repeatedly tells you what his set of skills is and how he's going to use them. And then that's exactly what he did. You really have a good understanding for him. You have a good understanding for the legal system and how it's really not as simple as you think it would be. Like you kind of think of the legal system and the way it works. And I think to myself, well, if I was a victim of sex trafficking or a sex crime, that the government would just intercede and attack and take care of it, fix it. That's not the way things work. You have to be able to get the FBI or one of these government agencies to bite on your case and then pursue it. And it is very difficult and can take weeks, months in some cases, years. It can be a nightmare. And that if they're backed by big money and power and connections, that in this country it can be very difficult to take care of things that should otherwise be very simple to wipe out, frankly. That was a wild perspective to receive from this whole thing. And I hope to see more of the Seagram story side of it, the Seagram sisters, and what the fuck happened there in these other documentaries too. And it's something that I will watch more about, because I'm fascinated by stories with people who are broken and with people who are overcoming and with people who are so, like sociopaths as well. That's such an interesting facet of society.
Yeah,
we have these outliers that are just out there fucking doing shit for completely different reasons than everybody else. Like, that's a very crazy thing to accept and to see in action. And, you know, we've cults are part of like this American crime. What do you want to call it?
Yeah, true crime type stuff.
They fit in with all the shit we're obsessed with,
right?
With like the mafia, with organized crime, with cults, with, you know, once upon a time in Hollywood and
serial
everything
killers.
That happened with the Manson family was one of the most in famous events in American history. Serial killers, we're obsessed with all that. To roll it all into one sort of nightmare in the form of a company, this corporation that was built out worth hundreds of millions or however many dollars it was at one point, that's crazy. That it included like big money, really powerful people, and was like a corporation behind this guy who saw himself as this world-changing sort of Jesus figure.
It was. Yeah, and that was truly like what you know, kind of a a big difference between this cold and a lot of the others. You know, the one of the others that I'm pretty familiar with after listening to like a, you know, a multi-episode podcast on it was the Heaven's Gate.
Yeah.
One that thought that like the spaceship was out there. And this was so different because it's like it's very easy to write off some of those other cults that have like these more far-fetched ideas that sound so outlandish. Like,
yeah,
oh, you're
UFO
waiting for
religious cults.
You're waiting for aliens to come pick you up for the final spaceship ride, and then you all like wear matching Nikes and tracksuits and kill yourself at the same time. Like that's right. It's very easy to write that off as like,
Cults are insane,
crazy people that joined a cult.
Yes.
But this is, this like bridges the gap, right? Because it was a company, but guess what else it was? A multi-level marketing scheme. And everybody,
I'm also obsessed with that.
Everybody
concept.
Listening to this podcast knows at least one or two people that are involved right now with a multi-level marketing
scheme. MLM, as they're called.
And so to actually kind of have this documentary place MLMs kind of in between real companies and cults,
yeah,
I thought was like a nice little wrinkle, because that's certainly the way they feel to me.
That is indeed.
And then at the same time, you get those moments. We talked about the one that was so impactful with Mark, Bonnie, and Catherine there. But then another one that I wanted to touch on to make sure we touched on, because again, it's one that will stick with me, is when Mark and Bonnie are just like, they're getting coffee when they're in Toronto or
dude,
wherever.
Yes, this was one of the cooler scenes.
And they're, you know, they're just like, they strike up this conversation.
Somebody goes, what brought y'all here?
Yeah, with people
like,
that are sitting there.
It's going to sound crazy. Yeah.
And then the one woman is just like, oh yeah, that's like crazy. And then she goes like, she basically does the thing that it's so easy to do where she's like, I just think that like, I could never join a cult because this, and this. Like, essentially, and when you do that, when you have that reaction, it's like, not only are you saying that you're too smart to ever join a cult, but that you're not as dumb as you guys. I'm not as dumb as you guys. I would never join a cult.
Yes.
And you can see that Bonnie and Mark like have no answer for that, and that it like puts them back into that sunken place of shame,
where they're like,
because
they
have the same guilt of like, and how did this happen to us?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, that's the thing that this documentary did so well in those first two episodes.
Show you how
you get involved in something like this.
To show
and
you
so I just,
how yep. excited you would have been about the self-improvement, how if you had nothing going and you were looking for a new wave or an answer, something to get you moving, and if this got
or
you
a lot going so, and you needed more.
And a
right?
lot of these
like
people,
you,
for them, very,
wanted to...
it was effective, though. It was they were having success professionally. They were
exactly,
seeing
yeah,
things
exactly.
in their lives turn around.
Yeah.
And again, for months and months, and in some cases years and years, these positive steps and changes being implemented as they saw it as a result of Keith Raniere. So then by the time things got hairy, you're so deep and you're so bought in and you're so convinced that this guy is the reason for these changes in your life, when really it's all you, that you're willing to look past things that you normally wouldn't. And it's very easy from the outside looking in to stare at a situation like this, make fun of it, see all these different ways that these people were duped and be like, how? But on the inside, you got to remember another thing, element of this. When they bring in the anonymous woman who was recruited by her fucking gardener.
Oh, yeah.
The black gardener woman who brought her in, ended up being her master, and then getting her into DOS. That showed you the scope of Nexium.
Yeah.
This wasn't a celebrity. It wasn't a Mexican president's son. It wasn't Catherine Oxenberg's daughter, India. It wasn't, you know, Mark, this weird Hollywood documentarian, and his quirky wife, Bonnie. That was very crazy. Like,
right, right.
I mean, the dude just had it clicking on every level in terms of deception.
Yeah, it was very, it was pervasive. It extended all over the damn place.
And he had it set up in a way that regular people who were completely not even looking for something like this even could be sucked in by accident. And then by the time and you know what? There was another thing that made me think of a lot, and that was a fraternity pledgeship.
Yeah.
There were elements of Nexium that were a lot like being in a fraternity. And a lot of pledgeship and a lot of the hazing that goes on historically in fraternities is sort of built in the same way. I'm hurting you, but it's for you.
Right.
You're going to be stronger and we'll all be better together as a result. That's why you endure the hazing you endure during pledgeship. Because you think this is better for me, my pledge brothers, and my fraternity as a whole. It's a very weird element to it, But it's one that if you're thinking that would be something that would be so hard for me to buy into, I can tell you that part of it is very easy.
No. That's a great point. Like we're sitting here right now and we've done something similar.
Yes.
Where you convince yourself and
this is why
whether you're right
this.
Or whether it's right or you're wrong. I mean, I don't think really either of us have any like regrets about that decision at all.
No.
But it's the same. It is the same concept where you glaze over something that probably isn't totally right.
That doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make sense.
Why do I need to do these wall sits? I don't know why I need to eat an enchilada made of dog food.
Because you sell yourself on like the overarching benefit of what.
And that element of it. I'm strong enough to do this. I can get through this.
Yeah.
Why would you eat an enchilada, a dog food enchilada? Why would any human being do that? Well, when it comes down to it and you're in the mental space where you're trying to impress all these people around you, it's like, I can do this. And if I can get through it, I'm better somehow as a result. And you see that with Sarah over and over and over.
Yeah.
That she was she'd never felt more empowered personally. And then in the fact of the matter was she'd never been less empowered personally. But that was the power of NXIVM and what Keith Raniere was able to accomplish. And it's what makes the whole thing so scary. All in all, The Vow is fascinating. I'm super thankful to you and to everybody else who pushed me to continue watching it and gave me details on it that would get me more interested, because just from like a human psychology standpoint, things like this are always wildly entertaining to me. You mentioned that the middle episodes were kind of when they lost you and you were like, this could have been three. It was so funny because those are the ones that sucked me in the most, but because my perspective was different. I knew some of the stuff that was coming.
Right.
So as a result, the middle was fascinating because I was seeing how it was going to get to where I knew it was going to go.
Yeah.
And I was so taken in by Mark and Bonnie and their exit and then recovery as both a couple and then like moving forward and how they were going to attack it with Sarah and Nippy and bringing in Oxenberg once India gets sucked in and the inevitable downfall almost being because Keith overreached. Like he had to get it on with a famous chick's daughter. You know what I mean? I'm serious. Like, it's like he had gotten to a place where he was like, now let's see if I can get away with this.
Sure.
That shit's crazy, man. And if you haven't watched The Vow, I don't know how you would need to watch it now. We've just talked about the entire thing. But we wanted to get me through it eventually and be able to have an episode entirely discussing The Vow. So this is it. Thank you for riding with us today. That will do it for today's episode of OCC, produced by Mariah Gossett and Mike Moody Garcia of Permanent Record Studios in Austin, Texas. Huge thanks again to our sponsor today, Quip.
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 Quip. Cool Quip. Getquip.com/OCC. Get yourself a Quip. And follow us on social media. We're on Instagram at Oysters Clams Cockles. We're on Twitter at Clams and Cockles. Facebook.com/OystersClamsCockles. Come back next week. Moving into 2021, Barrett and I are looking for ways to improve the show, change the show, make the podcast better. 2020 was very much a year of chaos in which we weren't able to implement a lot of new things or do anything very differently than we were from start to finish. So we've been discussing a lot of what that could mean for the future, how to make the show more accessible to a larger audience instead of so watch intensive, where we're having to watch and taking about 9 hours-ish of TV and movies a week, depending on what week it is. And for y'all, that's very intensive as well, and obviously difficult to keep up with the show. I'll give you an example. My dad doesn't get to listen to every episode anymore because he can't keep up with all the shows we're watching. So Barrett and I have found some solutions to those problems, and you'll be getting a lot more episodes like today's, where we're either focused on one subject or we're focused on a variety of things that are more general discussion points about entertainment, TV, film, pop culture, etc., Hollywood in general, that will be of a more spoiler-free nature so that every week you can tune in and not have to worry about having seen the last 9 hours of TV that we've watched. So have that to look forward to going into 2021. Very excited for all of y'all to be here with us moving forward as we make some changes. Patreon.com/OystersClamsCockles continues to be the place where you can support the show in exchange for ad-free episodes of this very podcast. And things are going to be changing enormously on Patreon moving forward into December, maybe even as well. November this month will be normal. You'll get 4 additional ad-free episodes if you're in the Mollusk Militia, 3 additional ad-free episodes if you're in the Crustacean Nation, and then you can see the other tiers and what they dictate. But we'll have a couple talking about whatever Barrett and I think would make the best episode on Patreon for that week, and then we'll have a hotline call extravaganza one. We'll do our movie club like we normally do. But going into December, Barrett and I are going to have huge announcements about things moving forward on Patreon. So get excited. I promise you, these are all great changes for the show that are going to make it more entertaining, more enjoyable on a week-to-week basis, strengthen our community that is the Clam Fam, and make us all happier. So stoked for 2021 and to turn the page on this hellscape of a year. I already said our social medias. Follow me, Ross Bolin, on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at WRBolin, at WRBOLEN. And you can listen to my mental health and wellness show, the Ross Bolin Podcast, wherever you listen to Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. We focus every week on mental health, wellness, comedy, animals, current events, history, pirates, and more. Sports, music, technology, the Ross Bolin Podcast. Go listen wherever you listen to OCC. And again, you can watch on youtube.com/BolinMedia, where you can also watch every episode of this podcast that is not premium, ad-free, and exclusive. Right there on youtube.com/BolinMedia. Mr. Dudley, where can we follow you on social media and hear more of your voice?
Oh, check me out at Barrett Dudley on Instagram and Twitter.
Twitter.
You can listen to the Club Cool podcast wherever you're listening to this podcast right here. Just search for Club Cool. And I'm just looking forward to 2021, where I'm taking on a third job after the events of this week. I just think that there is a really, I think polling sounds really interesting and productive. And
you're going to be one of the pollers?
I'm going to become a pollster.
You're gonna count?
It seems like a really good industry that's going up.
It's one that's got a lot of attention.
You know when you know the emoji with the red down arrow? There's also one with a blue up arrow. Give me 1 million blue up arrows.
For polling.
For polling.
And pollsters. Polling.
It's like just the best thing going right now, I think. And so I would just look out 2021.
Polling.
Polling. It's the next wave.
It's the next hot industry in the United States to focus
that way
on.
It's nice alliteration for me too on a business card, like pollster/podcaster.
Yep. It's nice and easy.
What are you doing in 2021? Podding in Poland?
PP. If you're in college right now, consider switching your degree from biomechanical technology.
If your uni offers a degree in polling, because it's definitely not going anywhere.
Yeah, polling. Or counting. Mathematics. Counting is also hot right now. Thank y'all so much. Appreciate you. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Come back next week for another helping of oysters, clams, and oysters, clams.
Oysters, clams, and cockles.
And cockles.
How much for your little Excuse clam?
Till next time. Adios, muchachos.